Hello everyone, my name is Anne Teato and welcome to the Psychic Matters podcast, episode number 84. Thank you to all my clients this month who booked a spiritual assessment with me. I've thoroughly enjoyed working with you all, and I am so happy to say that we have raised £300 for a charity very close to my heart, the Actors Children's Trust, or ACT for short, A-C-T. But what is a spiritual assessment, Anne, I hear you ask? It's a psychic reading specifically for those developing their spiritual abilities and skills, where a medium such as myself will sit with you in a one-on-one setting and feel into your energy and offer their perceptions of your spiritual journey and progress so far. It's a way for you to discover if you are on the right pathway, or to help you get unstuck if you're a little bit lost on the path, or maybe you want some validation or guidance on how to progress spiritually and where to train, what to read, who to turn to for your next professional development. So if you like the sound of that and you would like to book a spiritual assessment for yourself, I've got just two spaces left this weekend. And because they've been so popular, I've opened up another 12 appointment slots in March. So if you'd like to book one, try to get an appointment before they're all taken. And you can book by visiting my website, anteato.com, A-N-N-T-H-E-A-T-O.com, and look under events. My fascinating guest this week is John David Latter, who shares with us his extraordinary stories of what happened when he threw himself into unconditional love with sincerity and earnestness. He was a single father of two young children, terrified and stalked by an oppressive fear of death. He was at rock bottom, facing loneliness and bankruptcy. John threw himself into many unique and extremely personal experiences, which he willingly shares with us throughout this episode. Experiences that challenged his state of awareness and transformed his life. Go and get yourself a cup of tea and a spot on the sofa as you listen. And mark my words, once you've listened to this episode, you may never be able to fall asleep again without a dream journal and a pen at your bedside. Mystic, author, teacher, successful founder and CEO of a multi-million dollar consumer products company, John David Latter is in the studio today. John, welcome to Psychic Matters.
Thank you, Anne. I really appreciate the invitation and I'm excited to talk with you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you for making time for us. It's fortuitous as well that we're speaking today of all days because it's Valentine's Day. It is, of course, the perfect day to discuss your incredible book, The Synchronicity of Love, which is filled with your own amazing first-person stories that heal and transform and awake joy, I feel, in the reader because I read it. You very kindly sent a copy to me in the post before this interview. And it was such a joy to read. It was a pleasure. And I found it so fascinating. Every little tiny chapter was a little excerpt from your life, almost like reading your personal diary of your spiritual unfoldment. And you wrote, John, with such honesty and such raw authenticity. And you're so open and honest about how you feel about things. So maybe we could start with you speaking about how this book came about.
A big question. Let's see how the book came about. I think the reason the book came about was a little over 20 years ago, I had fallen in love with a book that Michael Crichton, the author, had written. Michael Crichton is very well known for lots of fictional novels that were turned into movies and he made TV shows. But a lot of people don't know that he wrote a nonfiction book called Travels. And it was sort of his autobiography and it was written similar to mine, a series of vignettes of his life, short stories. And he also went through a kind of a midlife crisis, you might say, but at a young age in a very unusual way. At the age of 30, he realized he'd achieved every goal he ever set out for in his life and he had no idea what he was going to do for the rest of his life. And he was freaking out and moved to Maui and started buying $500 worth of books at a time. And suddenly everything he said was equally uninteresting. He had no idea what he was going to do. And so he ended up signing up for his first ever spiritual retreat. And we were talking off the air just before this began about he also went to see the teacher who went by the name of Brew Joy, a very popular spiritual teacher in California in probably the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and was an eminent physician who turned spiritual teacher. And I loved reading the stories in his book, and I especially love reading the story about the spiritual retreat, even though at that stage of my life, I was very dogmatically anti-spiritual and anti-religious and very rational and competitive and kind of high energy guy. And that story in that book changed my life, because little did I know that my life was about to go all to hell, and everything that could go wrong all went wrong at the same time. And I was looking for a lifeline, and I looked up that Brew guy, thought, I wonder if he's still doing workshops, because Michael Crichton had gone all the way back in 1982. And here it was the year 2002. And I went, and there he was on the internet. It looked like he was teaching the exact same thing that Michael Crichton went to 20 years earlier. I signed up on the spot. I was so deep in debt at that time, I remembered thinking, well, if I'm going to go bankrupt, another couple thousand isn't going to matter. And so I went to the retreat, and literally the synchronicities began when I signed up for the retreat. I hadn't even gone yet, and strange things started happening. And so coming back to your question, why did I write the book? Because for the next 20 years, everything in my life changed in ways that I didn't think were possible. I didn't believe. My wife likes to say my book should have been called Rigid Rational Male Transforms into Random Accidental Mystic. And I was so grateful for Michael Crichton writing that book that I wanted to give back in the same way.
I mean, it's an extraordinary story. So you talk there of the synchronicities that you suddenly became aware of that started to happen. So before you went to that workshop with Brew, had you been aware of any synchronicity in your life before then?
No, never. And I didn't think I even knew what the word meant. I think I would have just called it a coincidence. I don't think I used the word like synchronicity or serendipity or miracles. I might have said, wow, what a coincidence. You know, I'm on the plane flying to the retreat, and as the plane is touching down, the woman next to me is reading Brew's book. And I'm very nervous going to the retreat, even though I love Michael Crichton's tale of his experiences there. I'd been so avowedly anti-spiritual. I just was genuinely nervous and scared. I hadn't been going to church since maybe the age of 14, and was probably a part-time Catholic at best growing up. And so I was nervous. And here's this sweet little grandmother from Kalispell, Montana, you know, this tiny town, and she's reading his book, and we're checking each other out. She goes, well, I'm really nervous. And I said, well, I am too. She goes, well, you look normal. Well, you look normal too. And I counted 180 people on the plane. The only two people going to this workshop is me and the woman, and we're sitting side by side. And again, I just at that time just chalked it up to a coincidence. I wasn't the type that said, oh, it's a sign. It's another synchronicity. But it kept happening more and more and more after that.
Let's go back. So you're the chief executive officer of this wonderful company that you set up. And obviously you were at some point in that company flourishing, and it was all going very well. So what happened to make you have this great crash in your life where things rapidly changed, or maybe not rapidly, but certainly changed from good to not so good?
Before I became CEO of my own company, I was the store manager in a large regional grocery chain here, and I'd managed a number of stores, and I was probably around 39 or 40 years old at the time, and I left to start my own company. And then at the same time, my wife got cancer, and it came completely out of left field, entirely unexpected. She was young, healthy, took good care of herself. And in less than 2 weeks' time from diagnosis to surgery, 2 weeks, they removed her entire thyroid gland and a bunch of lymph nodes. And to this day has to take a synthetic thyroid hormone pill every day just to live, just to survive. And so that whole process, plus the follow-up version of chemotherapy, is what they call radioactive iodine treatments, where she had to be sequestered away from friends and family for sometimes 2 weeks at a time. it turned her inward. She started reading books about God and the meaning of life, you might say. And at that point in age and stage and maturity in my life, I'm not sure I knew how to support what she was going through. I was at that same time left to start my own company, and I want to build it big and fast. And I had grand plans for it. And in 2 years, less than 2 years, I was $650,000 in debt. All of our money was gone. $250,000 of it was in personal credit card debt. I borrowed against the house. I mean, every penny was gone. And I didn't see any sign of it being able to be turned around. It was growing like mad, but for every dollar that was coming in, it seemed like there was $5 going out the door. And then, to top it all off, I don't know where it came from. Suddenly, I had this horrifying fear of death. And so I'm probably in my early 40s at the time. And I, again, because I didn't really have a religious or spiritual background to fall back on, and it wasn't something I thought about or confronted, it was terrifying to me. And I kind of associated death with the body. And if the body dies, that's the end of me. And that's oblivion. And the oblivion, the forever part, just terrified me. And then in the middle of it all, my wife decides to leave. And she wants a whole new life. She's just had her own little internal life review as a result of the cancer and makes a whole new start. And so now I'm a single dad with custody of my two kids, 9 and 11, a business that's hanging by a thread at best. And I'm a grown man running around behind closed doors, terrified of death. That was the beginning. And in all honesty, Anne, I think it actually would have taken something like that for me to even sign up for that workshop that I went to. I was so kind of entrenched in my ego and personality, this sort of anti-spiritual, anti-religious. It took me hitting my own personal sort of rock bottom and a lot of fear and worry and anxiety to go, I need to do something different.
It's an incredible story. And as you speak there, I can only imagine how much of your conscious, analytical, logical mind was required to run your business, because we need to do that in the human world. And so therefore, perhaps your unconscious, your soul self was not given a chance. You're so busy sorting all of that out. And it takes something extraordinary, as what happened to you and your wife, who had her own transformation through her experience as well, to lift you to the next level of whatever you're going to experience in this world. So I find the story absolutely fascinating. I really, really do. So you're on your way to Brew Joy's workshop. You have these synchronicities where you meet the lady on the plane, you're reading the book, she's going to the same place. And I know that there were some other incredible synchronicities that happened when you actually got to that retreat. Do you want to speak about those?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a funny thing, because so my wife wants a whole new life, but she left for another guy. And so I get to my retreat, and my roommate is the equivalent of the other guy. He also had met a married woman. They'd fallen in love. She ran away with him, but now they were unhappy. And so I'm sitting there like going, wow, this is really weird. Like, I'm at this workshop and essentially I'm being paired up with this version of the other guy. And then I get paired up with a gal a number of times during the workshop. And she tells me just quite openly, she's planning to leave her husband and children when she gets back from the workshop. And her kids are about the same age as my kids. And I'm just horrified. Like, I'm thinking to myself, I don't really say it, like, do you know how painful that is, you know? But after talking to her and talking to him, and the whole workshop was all infused with what I would call the energy of the heart center, which to me feels like love. It feels like compassion. It was really when I got to know them and got to know their story. And I remember the guy telling me, he goes, I guarantee your wife is in pain, John. You're thinking, oh my God, she left all the responsibility to you. You've got the kids. You've got all this debt to deal with, all this fear and anxiety, and she's run away. It's her whole new life. He goes, I guarantee she's in pain too. And so they weren't the experiences and synchronicity I was hoping for when I signed up for the workshop. And so what I ended up leaving with was the very seeds planted in what I would call compassion. Compassion for myself, compassion for my ex-wife, compassion for others. And weirdly, we did almost all the exact same things that Michael Crichton did 20 years earlier, but I had a completely different experience than Michael did. And so it was really cool. So yeah, it was like life had an intention for me in doing this, and it wasn't what I wanted. It was what exactly what I needed.
Yeah. And they are amazing synchronicities that you could see three-dimensionally, almost from everybody's point of view in this thing that unfolded. And you say in your book, if you can stand back from your suffering just a bit, you can get a glimpse of the bigger picture.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. When you're in it, it's really, really hard. But if you can step back from it, a lot of times things make sense. And, you know, I like to say a lot of times when you're really stuck in it, sometimes it just takes time and you can look back in retrospect and it makes sense. But if you're able while you're in it to just take a breath and sort of step back, oh, okay, I think I see what's going on here. Okay, this is good. I'm going through another growth curve.
Yeah. And I know it wasn't easy for you because you speak in your book, you're so true to your feelings. When you don't like something, you don't like something. You don't mess around sort of hedging your bets. You're just like, no, I feel really uncomfortable, don't like it. And I found that really refreshing to read. So, of course, we know you've come on this huge transformation from A to Z. But tell us a little bit about Brew and his dream work, because dreams played a very, very important part for you, did they not?
They did, and they still do today. Brew taught, like his teacher taught him, that dreams were sacred. And the beauty of paying attention to your dreams, writing down your dreams, trying to understand your dreams, it's all about making the unconscious conscious. Brew used to love to say, psychologists say we're like, I forget, 20% conscious and 80% unconscious. And he goes, in my experience, we are 99.9999999% repeating unconscious. And it's kind of a sobering thing when you think about it, like how little we're actually conscious of day in and day out. And so anybody that's tried to do any kind of grand dramatic change in their life, you know, like I want to lose weight, I quit drinking, immediately bumps up with one part of them is saying, let's do this. Another part is saying, nope, not going to do that. And so by paying attention to dreams, at least in the beginning, it's a doorway into your unconscious. And so much of the time we're being driven by the unconscious. It's also been said that if you want to know the truth about you or yourself or another person, look at the dreams, because the dreams always speak with unvarnished honesty. And they can be kind of humbling and embarrassing. And all the parts you maybe wanted to hide about yourself, they're all right there in the dreams. And I think he said he liked Carl Jung, and Jung loved to work with dreams too. And if we make the unconscious conscious, then our lives are less driven by what we call fate. But that's just the beginning. And I didn't know that. So I threw myself into dream work. He had a dream form. He had a really wonderful ritual for remembering a dream. I started doing the little ritual, and I'll share it here. As you get in bed, have a recording device or a notebook and a pen or a pencil, something to record a dream, put it next to your bed. And as you're drifting off to sleep, imagine yourself in your mind's eye standing at the edge of a cliff, and you turn your back to the abyss, take all your clothes off completely naked, and fall back into the abyss in total trust and ask for a dream. And so I started doing that night after night. And sure enough, I had a dream. Maybe I remembered like 3 seconds of the dream, and then a little more. And I don't remember what it was, maybe a couple of weeks. And suddenly I've gone like 5 dreams a night coming through. It's like this flood coming through. And then anybody that's began dream work will understand that remembering the dream, writing down the dream is half of it. But now you're looking at a dream that makes no sense. It's a little bit sometimes like Alice in Wonderland. They're very rarely literal, direct, in your face. And so they mostly are speaking in symbols. And so it does take time to learn to work with the symbols. And there are personal meanings to dreams. There are cultural meanings to dreams. There's universal meanings to dreams. And a symbol of, you know, it cracks me up. I have a couple of books on dream symbols, and it's amazing how a serpent is revered in India, but reviled as the devil in Christianity, or same with the crow. And the crow is so many good things, but in Christianity, it's evil and the devil. So it's really tough, but there's a language there, and it's your language. And when you learn to read it and understand it, it's a beautiful doorway into greater consciousness. And what I didn't know was it was also the doorway into what I would call communication with my higher self, communication with other beings, communication with guides and angels, what I think a lot of people attribute to intuition and things like that. And There's a chapter late in my book that I call The Spectrum of Dreams. And I think I wrote down like 15 or 20 different kinds of dreams. And I love dreams. One of my favorite books is Second Sight by Judith Orloff. And she also has had a lot of interesting dreams, highly psychic from a young age. And she would talk about, if I went 3 or 4 or 5 days without a dream, I'd feel lost. And then I'd have this beautiful dream and it would just infuse my entire essence with kind of a sense of gratitude and joy that would last for a few days. And so that's really how it's been for me.
It's great that you've given us that ritual as well that we can try out now at home. Yeah. But what about people that might say to you, yeah, but John, I never dream. I never remember my dreams. So there's no point.
Yeah. The answer is, I think there actually are some people like that. And my understanding is not everybody is visual. I mean, this podcast is called Psychic Matters. And so you're probably aware that how people get psychic messages are different. There are people that get it. They get what I would call a download. They just know. They don't know how they know. They just know. Some people, they get voices that speak to them beyond just their chattering mind. It's clearly a different voice. They get information. Some people get it through their feeling levels, kind of a kinesthetic thing. They just, when somebody says, I trust my gut, that's a real thing for them. And some like me are primarily, but not exclusively, more visually oriented. And some people have said, if the connection to and development of one's astral body is not highly developed, it actually can be hard to see a dream. That having been said, I think my experience, most people just haven't gone through the process of actually asking, actually experiencing the dream. My wife is one of those people that's probably more kinesthetically oriented and said, I don't dream. I don't remember my dreams. But she's having dreams now. They're harder to hold on to, I think, visually and memory than it is for me, but it can be done. So that's a long way of saying, I think it's easier for some people than for others. But if you ask sincerely and you ask whatever God or your angels or your guides, like, I'm ready. I want to have some dreams. And you go through that little ritual night after night, you have something to record. My experience is for most people, dreams will come through.
Thank you for that, John. Yeah. That's really interesting as well. I think my great takeaway from reading about your dream experiences was how you put your faith and trust in other beings who would come to you, that you would explore that and you were very free and open to receive whatever was given to you in your dreams. I found that really interesting because it's easy to just dismiss it and write it down or just not really invest in it, but you invested in it and wanted more and wanted more and you got more,
yeah.
Got more.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And I think the seeking more was because the more I like to say in this lifetime, in this journey, I like to say I'm walking the path of the fool. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in sort of an innocent way. Like there's so many things that I bumped into that at least in this lifetime, I didn't know were available to me. And so I think anybody that ever bumbles into, say, a lucid dream accidentally will say, that was freaking amazing. It's just so cool. Again, that chapter in the book, there's so many different types of dreams that I kind of did go into it like the open-minded explorer, like, well, show me more. Oh my God, I didn't know that was, you know, I share, like I said, so many different types of dreams. One I'll share that was so random. I'm having this hyper-vivid dream where I'm standing, say, waist-deep in the ocean on the beach in Southern California, and it's at sunrise, and it's really beautiful. And all of a sudden, there's an earthquake, and I can feel the sand shifting underneath my feet. And I'm thinking, this is the coolest thing on earth. I'm standing waist-deep in the ocean during an earthquake. And it feels so unusual. Boom, I wake up, I write down this dream that I was standing in the ocean waist-deep during an earthquake. And it was 6:32 in the morning. I get up, I go to work, da-da-da, and I hear on the radio, there was an earthquake in Southern California at 6:32 in the morning. I'm like, I know, I was there. My rational mind is like, how the heck can you explain that? And so things like that were happening all the time that I just didn't know were possible.
That's just extraordinary. I love that story. And then you had visitations from goddesses. And can you speak a little about that too?
Yeah. If you could say my spiritual journey began when I went to that retreat, 2 years later, So I'm running my company. And like I said, it's the sales are great, but the profit is not there. I'm just bleeding lots of cash. But I had the opportunity to appear on QVC, the home shopping network. And I was excited, but I was also nervous because they said we would have 700,000 new viewers every 60 seconds. And I'd never appeared on live TV before. And so they said, yeah, you have basically 7 minutes to sell as much as you want. It's kind of a casual conversation over the backyard fence, kind of like you and I are having here, just a casual conversation. Don't hard sell anybody. And anyway, I sold a fair amount of product, not a ton, but not a little, kind of in between. I went back to my hotel room in Philadelphia and was having a hard time sleeping. And I had all this joy in my body. And I just assumed it was because I didn't screw up live on TV and the relief that it was over and it seemed to go pretty well. And at midnight, I'm laying there dozing. I'm on my back, just laying there kind of half asleep, trying to go to sleep. And all of a sudden, I feel what feels like an orgasm in my root chakra, my perineum, which there's another example, like, who the hell knew that was possible? And it just permeates my whole body with this beautiful, like blissful, I called it orgasmic honey. And part of me is like, what the heck was that? I don't know, it sure felt good. And then a few minutes later happens again and then again and again, and it goes on and on. I don't know the exact time, I want to say a few hours. And finally I have to get up and I'm shaking off all the energy in my body. And part of me is like, I have no idea what's going on with me. And so barely slept, hop on a plane, fly home. I email a bunch of people from that retreat 2 years earlier that I thought might know. And they said, sounds like Kundalini rising. Look it up. So I look it up and I'm like, oh, yeah, that is kind of what is happening. And so from that day forward began what I call my dance with the goddess. And Kundalini energy is sometimes referred to as Shakti. It's sometimes called feminine energy, earth energy, sexual energy, primal energy. And that's how it all felt to me. And every two or three nights, the energy would come again and all sorts of crazy things would happen. Part of which were all sorts of crazy visions of goddesses, you know, young ones, old ones, middle-aged ones, tall ones, short ones, redheads, brunettes, blondes. I had the best sex of my entire life with goddesses. Everything in my inner world was changing. In fact, it's funny, I remember having a dream where I was back at my original career where I was a grocery store manager. And now I come back and I don't know how things run anymore because it's all being run by women. And they're like, oh, it's okay, John. We're going to show you how everything runs and works now. It's like, hey, got it. Without knowing it, and it all makes sense in retrospect, this sort of me, the kind of rigid, rational, high energy, competitive masculine was being, I would say, balance was being presented to my life. My entire feminine side, or what people usually associate with the feminine, was being awakened. And I want to say integrated in my life in a way that I never had before. And that went on for years afterwards. Most intense, probably the first 6 months. And the funny thing is, I would find myself waking up in strange yoga positions, doing strange things with my hands, even though I didn't practice yoga.
Wow, that's extraordinary. That's amazing. So I don't know much about Kundalini rising or anything like that, John, but I was fascinated by all of that. And from what you've just said, is that something that people that are listening could experience for themselves? Or how do we make that happen for us, you know? And what is the benefit of it,
I suppose? You know, Anne, I love
apart
that you
from
asked
it sounding that. Incredibly pleasurable.
Yeah, and terrifying at times, but more pleasure than pain. Yeah, it was scary a lot of times, but I was enthralling too. That is the most common question I get when people read my book. How do I get some of that Kundalini? And the answer is, I don't know. But here's what I found out. All cultures around the earth talk about energy. They use different names. I think Christianity, they call it movement of the Holy Spirit. And I've forgotten all the different names the different cultures call it. But in the classic Hindu explanation of it, this energy called Shakti awakens in the root chakra and rises up and purifies all our chakras and meets Shiva in the crown, which is like the masculine principle. And they forever enjoy union there in the crown, masculine, feminine in union, working together. And so that's the goal of the Kundalini, as I understand it. And there are all sorts of practices to awaken the Kundalini. Kundalini yoga has been around for forever. And A lot of people do it exactly for that reason. They want to awaken this energy. And so I wasn't doing any specific practices when it happened, but I was doing something. And I actually think, looking back, it was valuable. I really trusted that first teacher, Brew. And he said, I teach heart-centered meditation to my beginning students, to my advanced students, and to my advanced students. And so I really trusted this sort of spending time in the heart center, that seat of unconditional love, that seat of unity that kind of unifies masculine and feminine, heaven and earth, soul and spirit, body and mind. And combined with the dream work, you might say I did a lot of personal work in a short period of time, a lot of integration of different aspects of myself, a lot of things that I was afraid of, learning to move through them. And so I think, without knowing it consciously at the time, I was preparing myself for this energy. And so I don't know. I think sometimes it's funny. There's a spiritual teacher that's quite popular that writes books on enlightenment, and he calls himself Adya Shante, which means primordial peace. And one of my favorite books from him is The End of Your World, Straight Talk on the Nature of Enlightenment. And he talks about how common it is for people to have a glimpse. It might be a few seconds, might be a few minutes, might be hours, days, weeks, maybe even a few months of what he calls awakening. Because people rarely wake up wide awake and stay awake. They wake up, they get a glimpse, and then they go back to sleep again. And people are always kind of bereft, like, oh my God, I had it, but I lost it. And what do I do now? And he says, return to cleaning up all the things that trigger you, all the things that you're afraid of. It's not very sexy or exciting, but doing that sort of personal work, I think, is what opened the doors to all of this energy coming through. I also learned, interestingly, that Kundalini, one lady described it as balancing energy. And so she had a very different experience from all the other books I had read about. She already was primarily feminine, and the energy came through and brought in all of the masculine for her. And so she said, I think if you've been living a one-sided life, which I definitely was, that energy of transformation is far more intense. If you're more balanced to begin with, maybe even more healed to begin with, I think the energy is more subtle. But almost everybody at some point or points in their life will experience energy, is the best way I can put it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's fabulous. Thank you for that explanation from your point of view. That's really interesting. So dreams basically became your teachers.
Yes. Yeah, they still are today.
Amazing. And this whole thing has taken you through this journey of unfoldment to understand more about synchronicities and how they unfold in one's lifetime.
If you remember at the end of my book, my grand conclusion from the whole Kundalini thing with me. So again, in the classic Sanskrit or Hindu texts, Shakti rises and meets Shiva in the crown and they forever enjoy union. I'm going to call it the top of the head or above the head. Here's been my experience so far. And I'm going to see if I can tie these together. If you remember, I had a really, really, really extraordinary experience with Mother Mary, where I saw her as clear as I'm looking at you or my desk or the microphone. I had high ceilings in the bedroom, and there she was in her light body, as clear as can be. And never, I'm not usually clairvoyant during the day with, you know, my day-to-day world, but there she is. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I'm with another woman, and before I can say, oh my God, Mother Mary is here, my experience of it is she literally comes into my body and fills it with what I would call ecstasy. Like, it was beyond ecstasy. And the first thing I became aware of was, my body's not built to contain this. Like, my body's going to blow up from too much amperage, too much electricity. And what it felt like was too much ecstasy. And at the same time, there was love almost beyond belief. And it lasted for maybe 10 seconds, and then it was over. And because right before it ended, I thought, this is it. I'm going to blow up. Over time, my experience with Kundalini and experiences like this sort of taught me, you may have heard a lot of people are talking about Earth is ascending. All of its inhabitants are moving to a higher vibration. Well, for that to happen, each individual body has to go through a a reconstruction process, a process that I think is underway for probably most of humanity right now in dribs and drabs and little bits. And so I think my experience with the Kundalini taught me was that's what all that energy was. It was remodeling my body. And because about 4 or 5 years after the onset of all that energy, then came this beautiful, really beautiful, what I would call the descent of light from above down into the body. And so I think this is an ongoing process for all of mankind where the body is being upgraded to contain more of what I would just call divinity or a higher vibration. Some people say the soul, my soul, your soul, only a tiny part of it is actually in the body. The other is out there. And sometimes the goal is to bring more of that soul into the body. And so another way to look at moving upwards in consciousness or moving towards enlightenment isn't so much ascending and moving up as it is bringing, you might say, God or divinity or your soul down into the body. But that can't happen unless the body's remodeled first. And so that's been my experience. And I got to experience it and witness it. And it all kind of makes sense. They all go together, this sort of trying to clean up your personal issues to the degree that you can, trusting the universe has some sense of divine timing about when to remodel your body, and then more and more of what I call higher vibration or divinity or soul or whatever you want to call it comes down into the body so that hopefully we're all embodied in this higher state. Now, I don't know if this is going to take place over many, many, many generations. I can't really tell you, but I think that that's what's afoot on Earth. And while most of the fireworks have ended for me now, I still think it's ongoing. I still have days where like, what the hell is going on now? I can hardly get out of bed. I feel like I weigh 1,000 pounds. There's days where I just like, oh my God, I just have to go lie down. And it's entirely unrelated to health or disease or illness or anything like that. And I've had dreams that have told me like, yes, this is the ascension process that's afoot right now. After all of that, that was the conclusion of my book, that mankind and myself are involved in this body remodel. And then more higher vibration will take root in this newly remodeled body. And they're kind of working together.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it?
It
fabulous.
Is.
And what's your biggest takeaway, John, from overcoming all the challenges? Obviously, you've gone through, I don't know, did you become bankrupt in the end?
Weirdly, the day I talk about the synchronicities, the day I signed up for the retreat, it didn't get better, but for 2 years, my business kind of stayed the same. It didn't get worse. It was just enough to hang on. And so for 2 years, it just hanging by a thread, but it wasn't getting worse. And then all of a sudden, you know, after 2 years of just hanging on, it started to take off. And like a year or two later, was making more money than it ever made in my entire life. Everything I thought could happen and all were my plans, but who knew I'd have to go through this pit of hell first.
Yeah, but you've gone through it because you're teaching all of us. It's not always just about us, is it? We're so connected to all the other souls that live here. We're such a matrix. We're each other's teachers as well.
I totally agree. Absolutely.
And one of the things that you say at the end of your book is if we follow the little threads of our desire, it can lead to unexpected and synchronistic miracles. And I love that. Just maybe before we finish, just tell us a little bit about how can we find that little thread of desire within us and how do we follow those things?
Oh, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up because that's was such a big thing for me. Like, okay, so if I'm stepping back from my life and I'm watching John reading this book, this story in Michael Crichton's book about his times at the spiritual retreat, my heart is singing and it's so like, ooh, that sounds so cool. I must have read that story. It's probably 20 pages long. 100 times. I'm not kidding you. Over and over, I kept reading this story. And so if I was being utterly honest with myself, my deepest desire was to go do something like that or go to that same thing. But then there's the layers and layers of it's weird. It's out there. It's not a traditional religion. I don't even know what it is. And I had built up such a powerful ego identity, I guess, in being anti-religious, anti-spiritual, totally logical, that it meant kind of shedding that encrusted personality. And so I think most people, if they're really honest with themselves and can beneath all the fear, I guess, and all the shoulds and should nots, there's like a little seed of desire there. And that's the thing I want people to try and get in touch with. If you follow that, it's like your deepest desire, maybe not your parents' deepest desire or your culture's deepest desire or what you think you should do or shouldn't do. It's there in all of us. And I thank my lucky stars every day that I had the courage to say, oh, screw it, I'm going to go do this. If I go bankrupt, this extra couple thousand isn't going to matter. I need to do this. And yet, if I was being really honest with myself and, you know, like, what is my deepest desire? Oh, I want to go experience what Michael Crichton experienced. I'm going to go do that. We're on your show, Psychic Matters. And I think, you know, it's really beautiful. Michael Crichton was making a movie in England with Sean Connery. And Michael Crichton had made up his mind that he wanted to directly experience things that he'd only read about or had judgment about, but he hadn't actually experienced himself. Well, there was a big psychic fair in London at the same time he was making the movie. And so guess where he went every single day after shooting? He'd go and sit with another psychic or two. And oh, it was really funny. And he recorded everything everybody said. And one of the things one or two people said were, Michael, you are totally psychic. And then at that point, he was still skeptical. He's like, well, that's just totally proof that psychics don't know anything. I'm not psychic. Well, it turned out Michael Crichton was unbelievably psychic. And wasn't even more than, a few years later, he was out on a ship in the Caribbean using his psychic and intuitive abilities to locate sunken ships from the 1800s.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And that's the other thing is, you know, if there's some sort of fear, there's also kind of some sort of desire. If there's some sort of defense against something, like go explore it for yourself. If you've never actually explored it, I think that's the other thing I'd like to say is, you know, decide for yourself what things mean. If you can, go experience them for yourself. Don't just take the word of others or, you know, what somebody else wrote in a book. Go try it for yourself.
Great advice. Great advice, John. Thank you so much. Your book, The Synchronicity of Love, where can people buy it if they would like to get a copy?
Yeah. Like so many books, Amazon is probably the best place. I'm not sure there in the UK, but I know in the US, it's also on Barnes & Noble and Target and Walmart as well.
Fantastic. I read somewhere that you'd run workshops and things. Mm-hmm. So can you speak a little bit about that? Because I think that would be fascinating for our listeners.
Yeah, I haven't, unless some of your listeners are here in the Seattle area, prior to COVID, I mostly taught workshops in person and I've just started that again. And in fact, I have a workshop on February 25th called Love in Action, Renovating, Rejuvenating, and Revitalizing Your Life. That's the title. It's an all-day workshop, and we're really exploring unconditional love in the heart center, compassion, and we're really focused on self-love and body love. And again, kind of coming back to this issue of a lot of people don't really think about the body on the journey to higher ascension. But I think I'm really helping teach people to revere and have reverence for the body and to care for the body, because all bodies are going through minor to major remodels and upgrades right now. And I don't think there's ever been a more important time, to the degree you can, to bring love to your body, appreciation to your body, food, diet, exercise, movement, all that type of thing. And then we're also teaching about the power of feeling states and the importance of, a lot of people know this now, but how emotional states can affect the body in both positive and negative ways. And so that's the workshop I'm teaching on February 25th.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely brilliant. Is that online, John?
No, it's in person. Fly out to Seattle. We'll save you a seat, Anne. So. Just pop over to Seattle.
Definitely. I'll be in the front row for sure. People want to look you up. What is your website, John, and your social media platforms?
Yeah. Website is johndavidlatta.com. Last name is spelled LATTA, johndavidlatta.com. Everything's there. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I think that's it for social media.
I think that's plenty.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they take a lot of our time, don't they, our social media platforms?
They really do.
But listen, John, thank you so much for coming on and spending the time talking to us about your personal journey. I found it absolutely fascinating. And again, the big takeaway for me is following my dreams and really investing in them and allowing them to teach me things and write them down, because we do forget, don't we? If we don't write them down, we must make a journal.
Yeah, even I, like if I don't scribble at least a few words down to help trigger my memory, it just slips through. And oh, and that's a terrible feeling, because sometimes you know you've had a profound dream and it's really important. It's like, oh, I can't remember it.
I know, but it was great. Thank you so very much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us today, John Latta.
Thank you so much, Anne. I appreciate you as a host and I appreciate you inviting me to be on your show.
Pleasure.
John David Latta there, everybody. What a wonderful interview that was. I so enjoyed talking to John and reading his fascinating book, The Synchronicity of Love. As with all my podcast episodes, there is a full transcript available on my website, along with show notes, which contain all the URLs mentioned in this episode. And there will be a link there which will take you directly to John's book and John's work. Go to anteato.com, A-N-N-T-H-E-A-T-O.com, and look under the podcast tab. Don't forget, if you would like to book a spiritual assessment with me, I've got 12 appointments available at the moment in March, and you can book those on my website. For now, I wish you a wonderful couple of weeks, and whatever you do, don't forget to buy yourself a dream journal and begin to log those wonderful unconscious experiences. Write down your dreams and begin, as John suggests, to make your unconscious conscious. My name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.